Hello, I'm Kirsty Rice, and welcome to the Two Fat Expats, the podcast that will fill you up with fat ideas on how to live your expat life to the fullest. Okay, here's a trigger warning to all you parents out there. Be forewarned. Today, we're talking about homeschooling. I can almost hear you out there right now with your fingers in your ears pretending not to hear me. La, la, la. But for some expats, homeschooling isn't a choice. It's the reality of the expat move. And for others, it's a way of life. Today, we're going to hear from you with your thoughts and ideas, as well as talking to the experts, the survivors, and the thrivers of homeschooling. This week, I'm in Doha, Qatar, and Nikki Moffat is in Hamburg, Germany. So let's go and say hello, shall we? Hello, Nikki Moffat. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you, Kirsty Rice. How are you today?
Good. I believe we're starting with an apology.
Yes. I'd like to start with an apology to the Czech Republic. I said last week when I was listening to the podcast, I said that it had not been in Europe when I was traveling by EuroPass. What I meant to say was it had not been a member of the EU, so I was unable to visit there on my EU Eurail bus. So, of course, the Czech Republic has always been in Europe, so I'm sorry about that.
So that's now two countries that you've had to apologise to now, right, isn't it?
That is correct. I'm aiming for a global apology. I've only got 194 countries to go. I think the Czech Republic got me on the way out, though. They knew what I was going to do, because this week, we've got a totally flat tire on our brand new car. Ooh. So my car is sitting across the street with a flat tire. And after we finish recording, I have to call the Pannenhilfe and hope that they will understand me and ask about my flat tire. So there you go.
What does the Pannenhilfe translate to?
I think it's roadside assistance. I've got like four numbers on this card that I can call, and one's Unfall Management, and I happen to know that Unfall is accident. So I don't need to manage an accident. And so then there's two numbers, one for me to call when I'm in Germany and one for me to call when I'm out of Germany for Pannenhilfe. So that seems the most reasonable explanation of what I need to do. But to be fair, I have cheated and I've WhatsApped a couple of German speakers and said, is this the right number? What about you? What have you been up to this week, Kirsty?
I'm a little bit grumpy this week, I have to say. I have a very sore shoulder, which it appears is translating into a frozen shoulder, which I had never heard of before.
No. My mother had two, one each side.
God. So anyone who doesn't know, because I had never heard of it before, after all my radio and recovery, from chemo and radio, I got back into swimming and noticed I had a very sore shoulder, and this shoulder just got worse and worse and worse to the point that I could no longer do up and undo my bras, which means all my children have become completely adept at doing up bras now. My sons
you can go old school and flip round to the front, you know, you can do that way.
I find that so hard though. People that can do the flip to the front, I don't know how they jiggle them around like that. I must wear my bra very tight compared to others.
I don't know. I'm just saying that I know that's what my mum had to do. So
right. Yes. Yeah.
Just offering tips that I can.
Yeah, but it's one of those things, right? The first visit to the physio in Australia back at sort of late November, early December, she said, have you ever heard of a frozen shoulder? And she said, oh, I don't think that's what's wrong, but I just wondered if anybody had mentioned it to you. And of course, you know, 3 months later and two lots of injections of cortisone and several visits to physios, doctors, and now an osteo, and pretty much confirmed that, yes, I have a frozen shoulder. So a frozen shoulder has three stages. It has the really painful freezing stage, which is what I'm in now, which you have really limited sort of movement, but it hurts, and you can't sleep on that side. and it's just incredibly painful. It hurts more at night and in the morning, and any sort of sudden movements or whatever. And then you have the frozen shoulder, which is supposedly quite painless, but it just doesn't move. And then you have the thawing shoulder where it thaws out and you start to get movement back. And this can last anywhere from 18 months to 3 years.
I do know that. I'm really sorry to hear that.
Oh, it's just hideous. Like, it's like, do you know, I reckon we've had enough. Do you know, I just think you do the cancer thing and then you do the kid off to school and, you know, you do the major upheaval in life and, you know, then your husband finds out his company is going to merge with someone and then your shoulder stops working. It's like, come on.
That's enough. That's three. That's three if you count them. So you're good now. Okay. How long do you get on?
I think it's four. I think there's someone in a car right now listening to our podcast going, that's four. Anyway, we will move on because we know there are worse
things. Let's talk about homeschooling because maybe if I was homeschooled I could count properly.
So homeschooling, we wanted to talk about homeschooling this week because it is a huge issue with expats for a number of reasons. While there are many people that choose to homeschool at any time of the day, there are many expats that find themselves in a position where they have to homeschool because either they have a child with special needs that can't find an appropriate school, or their child cannot get into the school because there is a waiting list of hundreds of kids, which is very much the case in Doha. Or maybe they can't afford it because international schools are so horrendously expensive. And they might find that the local schools aren't accepting of them and their culture. So we put the word out and asked on the 4 Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle Facebook page and on the 2 Fat Expats Facebook page. And we asked you guys, what was your experience with homeschooling? And we got an amazing response, like many responses. Janine Buckley had me in hysterics when she said, yes, when we arrived in Doha 2 years ago, what a disaster. And she said she's a teacher. Which just made me feel so much better. But she said even as a teacher, she only lasted 2 months of homeschooling and that was it.
I knew, and who has a Finnish name that I can't pronounce her last name, so I knew, I'm sure you know who we're talking about. She homeschooled, and I actually think she lives in Hamburg. She homeschooled her daughter in Malaysia for a year, and she did a mix. Her daughter attended a local Malay school part-time, but they had Australian friends in the neighbourhood, and they did homeschool together in the afternoons. So the two Australian kids did correspondence from an Australian school, and Anu's daughter did Finnish school. They're all in one classroom and their PE was swimming, horse riding and trampolining all together. She said it was very fun and she has really fond memories of that time.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Anu does live in Hamburg because she's just posted a picture of her backyard in Hamburg, which we'll talk about later. But yeah, there's the segue that can't be segued as yet. Okay, now this story I thought was fascinating. This is Kim and Jed Johnson, who are Americans living in Ukraine. And they had always homeschooled before they moved to Ukraine 3 years ago, and they just assumed they'd do the same thing once they got there. They did homeschool when they first arrived for a few months, but then they soon realised their kids were really isolated and it just wasn't going to work, which is what we were talking about before. You know, if you remove quite often in these really sort of remote locations, if you take your child out of the school and you've got to find ways to get them involved in the community, it can be really, really hard. So she said they were happy in their learning, but there were zero opportunities for them to meet other kids and gain the language. And they plan to live in Ukraine indefinitely. So they thought it was only right for them to integrate the kids into the culture. There is no expat community in Ukraine at all. And she said their kids are the only foreign kids around. So school has been one really steep learning curve. So there's no English in the school. She said there's been lots of gains with the Ukrainian language, but socially it's been really hard. And that the I really feel for her because she said the kids are begging to be homeschooled next year, but they can't really decide what to do. And do you know, when it's really interesting, their community with the four kids, 20 suitcases page, because I read that and I could feel her pain, and so I didn't know how to write why are you there without it sounding like, why are you doing this?
Why are you in the Ukraine with no other expats and no English speaking people?
But thankfully Sharon did. So
good on you, Sharon. So Sharon wanted to know.
So Sharon jumped in and said, you know, why are you there? And she said that they're building family-style homes for orphans, for boys and men with intellectual and physical disabilities in a village there. And they just don't feel that they... And the phrase she used is, we just don't feel we can leave our boys... I mean, some people, I'm gathering that these guys are working on a mission of some sort.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Oh, gosh, you have to admire someone's faith when it comes to that sort of work, don't you? Like all the all the angst in your own personal life, but really feeling like you're there to sort of serve a purpose.
I have just started following this family on Instagram.
Oh, wow.
And I cannot remember right now under pressure what the Instagram handle is, but I will add it into the I think it's a public Instagram account. I'll add it into the show notes. But it is amazing. Their photos are fantastic. I really enjoy that this, she sort of writes a little story with some of them, and it's amazing. I'm really enjoying it.
Oh, I want to follow them too. So I'm going to look in the show notes after the show and find out. I'm really in awe of these guys. She said, you know, we know this is the work our family's meant to do, so we know we're going to be here for a long, long time. I just want our kids to have a good enough grasp on the language so that maybe they can return to homeschooling, like maybe another couple of years of national school. Or maybe they'll hire a Ukrainian to homeschool them. She said, or maybe we just don't stress about the language and I just homeschool them. I just need someone to tell me what to do. Yeah, we've all been there, haven't we?
Yes, we have. Okay, so that's an amazing story. And I will put the Instagram account down. So Rebecca Cameron homeschooled for 6 months when she couldn't get her daughter into an international school in Laos. She said she had personality clashes and it wasn't a great experience for both of them, but she was happy with the curriculum, which was supplied by the Distance Education Department in New South Wales, Australia. She thought the lessons were really engaging and worthwhile, but she was happy to end that situation.
I really loved Kelly's comment, which is more my style, of that she came really close to homeschooling.
Yeah.
Then she just bought the kids' school uniform and turned up at the school and volunteered, and they had no choice but to squeeze them in.
I think that I'd be going down that path as well. What? What do you mean you don't have my child's name? Here is my child. Vicky Woods couldn't get a spot for both her girls at the same school and returned to the UK, so she homeschooled them for a few months. But again, not ideal for her relationship with her daughter, who resented being home just with her mother, despite her enrolling her in as many classes and kids' activities as possible. So her daughters are both back in school now. They're in separate schools, but they're happier to be back in school. So that was Vicky's experience with homeschooling.
So Kylie Johnson had to homeschool for her autistic son for a year, as none of the English-speaking schools in Muscat would take him. And it was impossible, and she said in brackets, not strictly legal, to find a shadow teacher. So he was 5 years old at the time, didn't know any of his colours, and she said she sorted that out in the first week. So he's doing really well now. He's at a mainstream school with lots of friends and no shadow. So obviously that all worked out just fine.
So Joy Robbins accidentally fell into homeschooling, who'd never dreamt of it before, started with private international schooling in Dubai. She was very clever. She got together with a girlfriend and they hired a teacher to teach their children. And then the teacher repatriated. So they ended up having to teach the kids themselves, which was a bit of a shock to the system. She says it can be hard, but she loved the flexibility for school and for travel, which, thinking about expat life, that is a benefit. Huge. And the benefit of a consistency of curriculum wherever they lived. She said she repatriated for a year and the kids started back into school, but then they're overseas again and back into homeschool. She says one of the things, which is interesting, she said it can be too social. So horse riding, sailing, art groups, etc., can increase the sociability and decrease the sort of academic learning time. She wouldn't recommend it for everybody, but it works for them as a whole.
Now, Ian and Rose Barron, who we've spoken to before, Ian was the whiz on how to use your air miles. So when they were deciding to move from Australia to England, combined with the corporate takeover that they had happening in their life, they were in a situation where there was the potential for 4 school changes in 12 months. So homeschooling was the best thing for them. Rosie says it's the best thing ever. It really, really was a big good one for her. They've now settled in to Scotland for the foreseeable future. And she said, one of the best choices we ever made, and we have no intention of re-entering the school system anytime soon. The children are thriving in a way that they just didn't in the school system. What I thought was really interesting from Rosie is she said, as a teacher herself, she would say that the only benefit of a teaching qualification in the home ed journey is the ability to shut down the conversation when people question you on it. She said,
nice.
She said, teaching your own children is so far removed from teaching a class that a teaching degree is almost worthless. And I couldn't agree more. I was a swimming teacher. Teaching my kids to swim, paid someone else to do it. All right. So I wanted to talk to Margaret Douglas, who is the coordinator of the Doha Home Educators. There is quite a big homeschool sort of movement in Doha. What was really interesting about this, and I didn't realise, Doha, because everyone's here on a visa, it's actually very easy to track exactly how many people are in Doha and what they're up to, right? Because everybody that comes in is tracked and everybody that goes out is tracked through the airport.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So she said that a little while ago the government had tracked that there were 6,000 children that weren't accountable in the school system here. Anyway, let's have a listen to Margaret and she can explain how homeschooling has worked for her and how the system works for kids here in Doha.
We have anywhere between 90 and 130 families on our board at any given time. And if you figure 2 kids per family on average, you've got maybe 200 to 250 that are homeschooling and attached to us. Now, we're not the only homeschoolers group around. There's another very large one for Muslim moms called Muslima, and I don't know how many they've got on their rolls, but they also, I would say, have a couple hundred kids involved, at least 100 to 150. So then you've got all these other kids who are just sort of out there, hanging out there and not doing anything or not talking to us or what have you. How many of those are actually homeschooling and how many of those are just kind of marking time? I don't know. And I wish I did, because there are ways that we could help. But a lot of it here is either they cannot afford schooling at all, or there are no school places for them. Or, last category, they have some kind of a mild learning disability and the schools won't take them.
I guess there's also the category of people that choose just to homeschool, that they prefer to homeschool.
Yes. Now, there are some who we never see. And suddenly we find out, oh, yes, this person's been homeschooling for over a year. Did they know that there was a group in town? I don't know. But and some people don't choose to join groups, and that's fine, too. You know, it's whatever works for you and your family. That's kind of what homeschooling is about. and especially if you want to get away from some of the very rigid types of education that you tend to find in international schools, because they're trying to bring everybody together, and that's its own mission, and that's fine. But if that's not for you and your child, then you don't have much other choice but to do some sort of homeschooling.
So what does the average day of a homeschooler look like?
That would be asking what's the average homeschooler look like, and that's pretty much impossible. We just had a meeting. We're going to have 7 graduates this year, if you can believe that. 7 young people who have been active with Doha Home Educators for several years now are going to be graduating and going on to bigger and better things. We're trying to plan a little shindig for them, and so the mothers of seniors were meeting, seniors being the American term, sorry, for children in their last year of secondary, and so we were meeting and we were talking, but we're all over the map. Some of us do our own curricula, but are completely eclectic. Some are doing an online curriculum through an association or a group or a homeschool provider. We've got unschoolers, people who are completely child-led education, and they're able to go and decide what they want to study, and, you know, basically mom just helps facilitate that. So homeschooling days can look pretty much any way you want them to. They can look very formal, such as a school day would for a child in an institution, or they can be completely free form. Or sometimes they can be a little in between. You know, today I just sent my child to finish his history, and here's a map of medieval China, and here, go read this out of the encyclopedia. And, you know, it sounds very formal, but we've had a couple of days this week. You know, yesterday was practically all sports. It's sailing and golf day, and so it's trying to squeeze in some math and add a little bit of English in between there. It just depends on the day.
And so with those 7 seniors, as you called them, are they predominantly American kids that are in that 7?
Yes. And I don't know if that's the luck of the draw, because right now my middle school MUN team, we do Model United Nations through DHG, and I've got 6 different nationalities on that team of 8 kids. Go figure on that one. But, yeah, this group of seniors happens to be mostly American.
And so with those seniors, are they hoping to go to university in America next year?
I know 2 of them will be, because my son and co-coordinator's daughter, they've already gotten their places in their universities for next year. Others are going to be doing, you know, studying some free-form arts. Some others are going to be going to community college. Others haven't quite decided. And all of that's completely normal for all teenagers, and it's completely normal amongst homeschoolers.
So then do they sit their SATs at a certain time?
The College Board now requires that the SATs, if places are giving them the SATs, they must give them openly. So they're, you know, Qatar Academy does it, ASD does it, and so they're simply Saturdays that it's open. As long as you register, you have to register through the College Board and get a place in the exam. And then you can go sit the American College Boards. And the ACTs as well. My son didn't take those, but I understand there are a couple of places to give the ACTs, which is an alternate form of the American College Boards.
I guess as a non-American, I'm Australian, and so I'm trying to work out how do you then, if you're English or Australian, and SATs don't mean anything to those universities, how do you, because, you know, a lot of international kids choose to do the IB so that the IB would be recognised in their universities at home. What does a homeschooling child do that's, you know, not American?
A lot of them will, in their upper years, sit courses through an online academy, or they'll actually be in university early, like Open University in the UK and things like that will start young people at 16, I believe. So they can actually begin taking classes to show, yes, I'm university ready. Surprisingly enough, a lot of, even if you did more of an IB program, if you do sit the college boards, at the U.S. college boards, a lot of foreign universities will accept those.
Do you mind me asking you, what made you choose homeschooling for your children?
For us, it became a matter of pure economics. We didn't get school fees when we came here. The American School of Doha would have cost $20,000, not real, dollars, per child. In my experience, if you pay $20,000 in an American school, you would be getting a better education. It's not that any of the schools here are a poor education, especially the better ones. I'm sure there are schools here that are poor education, but that's my point is that as far as the money goes, they're well overpriced compared to what you get. They would be a very good school that you'd move to and, you know, oh, I want to be in that neighborhood because that's a decent suburban school. Yeah. Yes, it is. But it's not a $20,000 American school. And that kind of took me aback. And you know what? The homeschooling worked. Once we de-schooled, which is the process that you kind of have to go through after a child's been in school for a while, to kind of learn how to learn on your own. That's a different skill set than learning in a group. I've been very, very pleased with the types of things that we've been able to do as homeschoolers that we wouldn't have been able to do in a traditional setting. For example, my son teaches sailing. He's had that opportunity to go and do that because he's at a flexible schedule. And now he's RYA certified. My younger son doesn't really learn traditionally. He's that kid that, you know, you want him to get from A to B, and he's going to go off to Z and J and Q before he finally gets to B. And he'll have learned a whole lot more in the process, but you're sitting there going, child, just finish the paper, you know. which took a lot for me to learn, but he would have driven a classroom teacher nuts. Whereas we could handle that as homeschoolers and get him to a place where now if he'd have to return to school, you know, if we have to repatriate or what have you, that he's in a great position.
Have you ever had the situation where one of the kids has said, you know, I think I'd really like to go to school?
I haven't personally, because my older son was in school for a while, and I realized how much more flexibility he had with homeschooling. Once he got over having to, you know, be ripped away from everything that he loved and the only home that he knew and come over to the other side of the world, and that was a rather dramatic year for us all, as people who are new to expat life will remember. My younger son for a while was, I want to go to school, it's got to be better in school. And his older brother said to him, you don't know what you're talking about. You would not do well to sit in a desk for 6 to 8 hours a day. You don't know what it would be like. Finally, my younger son decided, yeah, I don't think I want to go to school. And now when we talk about repatriating, he's like, do I have to go to a school, Mom? I don't want to go to a school. My co-coordinator, on the other hand, has a daughter who's gone back to school. That's her style of learning. She does much better in a very formalized situation, and that's what works for her. And that's fine, you know. It's whatever it takes. Children are not little pegs that we can pound into whatever shape hole we think that they're going to fit into. They are their own individuals, and that's what philosophies of homeschooling are all about. Teaching to the child, not just teaching the subject.
So what did you think, Nikki?
Yeah, that last statement about children are not pegs you can pound into any little shape or hole you want to, I think that that's really true. And I think that's why homeschooling works for some kids and not necessarily others. It was interesting that her co-convener, one of her children went back to school and is enjoying it more there. So I find that interesting as well. The flexible schedule, yes, is a win. Or not, if you like things to be more structured. And the cost factor. So in my interview with Jane, which is going to come next, costs and finances also came up. And I think as expat life evolves and there are more people choosing to do it, and sometimes schooling isn't included and schooling can be really expensive. So decisions can be made and you can still live an amazing life in a different country. You know, maybe the money you're going to put towards schooling, you can put towards travel or something more exciting.
Do you know what the worry, though, is about this? And this is definitely not the situation with Margaret, but this really had me thinking, right, because it is a big deal with money because...
Yeah, it's so expensive.
Two things happen. One group of people forget to ask, or they don't factor it in. Do you know, you hear it all the time. Oh, we don't have school fees in our package.
I was going to say more and more companies are just giving a one number and saying, can you work with this number or not? And you have to say yes or no. And you know, so it doesn't specifically include schooling, but you have to decide whether that can cover any schooling, particularly if you're in a location where your children have to go to a private school or an international school.
Yeah, exactly. But that's why you should know how much that schooling is going to cost you. Do you know, like...
I think
a lot of people arrive and get quite the shock of how much it actually is. And I think that's something that it's irresponsible of companies not to tell people that are arriving in. I think that, you know, there needs to be schedule somewhere that you get told exactly what schooling looks like and what it's going to cost. But also within communities, you know, it's something that you need to really think about. But that wasn't really the point, I guess. My point of what I'm trying to say is something I had never considered. Basically, someone could have moved here as an expat 10 years ago and completely not educated their child and nobody would be aware.
That's true. But let me tell you, that can never happen in Germany. Because in Germany, homeschooling is illegal, which, yay. Yay.
Isn't
there are a few reasons I wanted to move to Germany, but I'm in for that. And the other thing is that constantly for the first month or 2 months we were here, I would get a letter in German and it started coming in white and then it came in yellow and then it came in green and then it came in pink and then it came in red, same letter. And the first three times I was like, this letter's too hard for me to read. And I put in the pile of things to do later. But then one day I sat down and it said, you have to report to the government where your child is at school or we're going to come round and have a look.
Wow. Isn't that interesting? And they were able to track you down, Nikki, that they knew where you were and were able to track you down, that they knew you had children.
That's the other thing. When you move to a city in Germany, you have to register. You can't get any services like telephone or electricity or water unless you have registered with the town authority to say that you live here and who is living with you. Yeah. So that's how it works here. So I'm pretty happy with that. I'm sure that there are no children in Germany who are at risk of the situation that you've just talked about. But I'm sure there are people in other countries who are at risk of that situation. But I also think most parents want positive things for their children and they want education for their children. And they think that education is an important part of the children being able to be independent and live a better life. So I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's a fascinating thing. And did you hear with Margaret, she used the word you have to unschool your child or de-school, I think it was, where you've got to move away from that. Look, the point that she made about the money I thought was really, really interesting. What I wish I would have asked her is what is a good education? Do you know, because the point that Margaret was making is she didn't feel that the American school was worth the money, that if you paid that sort of money in America, you would get a better education. But I don't know how you say how many dollars is worth what. Do you know, like, how do you say what a good education is?
And that's the thing. A good education is different things for different children. Totally. Like, the social side of things about homeschooling worries me for both my children. One of them would never talk to other people if they never had to and be very happy with that. And that's bad for, like, a long-term outlook on life and participating in the world. And the other one needs to talk to other people. And if she doesn't talk to other people, then she goes a bit crazy. So for them, like, being in a sort of school environment is much more important. And that's nothing to do with the academics. That's to do with their life skills or their sociability.
Yes, and down to the sociability, this is the thing about being in locations that can be seen as more remote. For me, you pay the money at a school in a location like Doha because you want the indoor and the outdoor swimming pool. You want the playing field. You want the baseball field. You want the gymnasium. You want the rock climbing wall. You want the theatre. You want all of those facilities that you just don't get anywhere else in Doha. There's all sorts of sports that happen every night because they have these incredible facilities that are available to them, it would be really hard for me to get those facilities. And yes, I could take them sailing, but I would have to drive them across to where the sailing is. I have four kids. Do you know, like, it would be back at, I did a 3 o'clock pickup, a 4 o'clock pickup, and a 5 o'clock pickup last night at school, which basically meant I drove to school and drove back. I drove to school and drove back, and I drove back to school again. And that's my life. But my kids were all busy, like playing instruments and in bands, yeah. And playing varsity softball and doing all of those social after school activities. So I find it, I really struggle with it, because I think here, you really have to, because I've seen homeschooling in America and I've seen how amazing it can be. I mean, you go to a museum in America during the day and you'll see a group of 50 homeschoolers all at the museum, right? It's organized schooling within itself. But you don't see that here in Doha.
Do you, or are you just not out then?
No, you should just...
Are you always home working? That's what I'm saying.
Now, what I thought was fantastic about Margaret, and I think she did a really great job of explaining sort of how it all worked and how it worked for them, was I loved that her son, she told me, not only got into university, but he got into university with a scholarship. So her son has done incredibly well, and she has done an amazing job of providing him with a fantastic education, obviously, to get him to that level. So I think big kudos to Margaret.
And absolutely. I just wonder how they make the transition. So how does her son go from this amazingly flexible lifestyle where he is the focus, the main focus, to university where, you know, you've got, it's quite structured and rigid, and you have to, I mean, I'm sure he'll do great, but I'm just wondering, is it an age thing? Are they ready? Like, how does that work? Because it is a big change.
Yeah, yeah. And it's also, well, has he worked off of a timetable at home? Because I didn't ask her that, if with that flexibility they still had a timetable. But yeah, it's a massive change to go from being in, he's about to go into back classrooms and lectures, and, you know, have to deal with, you know, adults other than his parents.
And learning at a rate of other people instead of learning at your own rate necessarily, which is, I think, would also be frustrating in that situation.
Yeah.
Anyway, I also did an interview with Jane from Hong Kong. Jane has three girls, and this is her second stint of homeschooling. So I started by asking her about why she went into homeschooling in the first place. So let's have a listen.
So the first stint was when we moved to Hong Kong, and we finished up the school year in Australia, and then we were trying to get a school spot for our eldest, who I think she was halfway through year three in Australia. And we were moving out of our place into my parents in another city and then moving here. So we decided that we would do distance education, actually. So we ended up doing that for 6 months until she started the new school year in the August. So we went from the December from the year before to the August when she started at an international school here in Hong Kong. And I've never been so relieved to see a child go off to school.
And how was the transition back from the homeschooling for her?
So she settled down pretty quickly, but she did end up skipping 18 months of maths just due to just the changes from Australia to here. Ended up that she had to jump forward. So for maths has always been a bit of a struggle for her, and she blames me partly because I did 6 months of maths for her. So she says that.
But now you're homeschooling another one of your children?
Yeah, so homeschooling my, so I've got three girls, so we're homeschooling our middle child. She actually started at the same school and did 6 months, and then we pulled her out. It's turned out that she has some special needs, which we're still going into and which we didn't fully realise until she started school. They started to become really apparent, and she was really struggling. Yeah, and I always said, I will never school a child at home again. But it just became obvious that she just was not, yeah, just not coping with the school environment. And it was just getting so difficult to get her there. And I just thought, this kid just needs, you know, she needs a break. We need to cut her some slack. So we decided to pull her out. And also part of the consideration was just the cost involved. So international schools here aren't cheap, but then any additional assistance or learning support is extra. So we were paying about half again to get her learning support and also seeing a lot of specialists, which was quite a hit each go. So we just decided we need to focus on what we're doing, and yeah, we decided that we would stop the school and just focus on seeing the specialists and figuring out what was happening and getting her treatment and just focusing our finances on that, and also just giving her a break from the stress that she was under, basically. So yeah, so I think it's a couple of months now that we've been doing that. So I'm just doing it myself. I said after the distance ed that I just wouldn't do it that way because there's not enough room to tailor it to the child. Our daughter really, she's not up to much in the day. So I just didn't want to have any stress of, you know, having to complete a certain amount of work. So we do very little formal work, and I haven't chosen a curriculum or anything. And actually here there's not any requirements. You don't sort of have to provide a curriculum or anything, and there's not really a formal way of them recognising that you homeschool. And I think, well, I don't know the ins and outs of it, but I think they're not keen on you doing it. As expats, I think we generally get away with it. At the moment, we're just kind of doing our own thing and waiting for someone to say, excuse me, what are you doing? So far, so good. Literacy and numeracy, basically, that was all I've really been worried about. And so just every day we pretty much do as much as I think she's up to. And then the rest is, I don't know, I think you call it unschooling or something. The rest of it we just, look, it's basically just the stuff that you do at home with your kids anyway. We do, you know, painting, and we'll make Play-Doh. She has a piano lesson, so she'll do a bit of piano practice. And then we just look up information. She loves turtles. She's got pet turtles. So, you know, we just read up about turtles, and she's really into Moana, the new Disney princess. Yeah. So, you know, we look up, we've been looking up a bit of Polynesian culture and the types of places, you know, whether it's a real place and what, you know, what the place is like. And so that's basically as difficult as it gets at the moment. And I think that's enough for her.
And has it helped her? Do you feel, can you see a real change in her?
Definitely the immediate change of just, you know, taking her out of a situation that was just really too difficult for her. So, you know, when she realised that she wasn't going to have to go to school. But I have tried to keep the language that she still does school. She's just not at school at the moment. Hopefully down the track she'll be able to go back, but I don't really know. Because it's been a bit of a running joke that, you know, over my dead body will I homeschool. And every now and then my eldest just sort of teases me and says, you know, I don't want to go to school anymore. Can you homeschool me again? And I'm just like, you know, start to get the twitches over it. But, I mean, that a lot of it, I always say it was the wrong mum and the wrong kid in that situation. Just, you know, I was asked recently when I said that my middle child is homeschooled, and they said, oh, is that just a, you know, kind of a decision that you've made of how you're going to educate your kids? And I said, oh, no, two of my kids are in school. I only homeschool one. And, you know, people find that a little bit confusing, I think, because usually people have a strong idea or commitment to the idea of homeschooling, and so they kind of head down that path. Whereas for us, it just kind of came about through necessity, I think, and not through any passion of mine at all.
Is there a big homeschooling community in Hong Kong?
It's not big, but there are... Yeah, there is a community, and I've met with a few people, and you know, we keep in touch and share ideas, and there is the opportunity to kind of get together. They have, you can get together. At the moment, we haven't done that. There's a lot of pressure on school here.
Yeah.
So I think people worry. A lot of people think it's illegal to homeschool in Hong Kong, and it's not. But it's, as I said, it's not encouraged. So I think people are often hesitant to do it. Well, the people I've spoken to, it's been due to a particular issue that has arisen. They haven't kind of decided from the outset, oh, we're just homeschooling type of people, and so that's what we're going to do. It's mostly been because of specific needs of their kids,
yep,
or just not feeling like the school situation was working out. The people I have spoken to, their kids have started at schools, and then they've made the change. Just from reading that I've done, I think for English speaking families, that there probably isn't a lot of resources for kids with special needs, and so I think that's probably a common reason that people decide that they're going to homeschool.
Kirsty, what did you think?
I love Jane's balance in that you can see one family, three kids, and very different options. What I thought was really interesting is she talked about focusing on her second child. Like, she used the phrase, we had to focus on our second child. We realised that we had to focus on particular things within her education, which I think is just incredibly brave to be able to say as a parent, right, we've got to take you out of this situation that's really distressing you, and we've got to work on this, this and this with you. But she also said they had to focus on their finances, and it comes back to they obviously didn't feel that they were getting value for money, which goes back to what Margaret was saying. She didn't think it was value for money. She didn't think the American school was worth $20,000. And, you know, it's a lot of money. I can also see that if you have a six-year-old, having that focus is far more time efficient, which goes back to my view of that really probably, I reckon, a good 2 hours of work is done at school a day and 4 hours of fluffing around happens. But I thought Jane was brave and clever, and it just showed you different needs, different kids.
So here's one thing about that with the finances. So Jane, they moved to Hong Kong before she had started formal schooling. So I guess the schooling, they had to discuss schooling with the employer. The employer said, okay, fine, whatever. Then she got to school and she had to have support at school. So they had to pay 150% of her school fees. Now, in situations like that, does the employer always pay? I mean, then they're in a different kind of situation. So, you know, you might think of these things in advance, and then things might change and your employer might say, well, you know, bad luck, we're already sort of doing this. So that's just another thing to consider before you go, if you're not panicked enough already about moving.
This is why we need the Fat Expats newsletter, is people need to be able to have little checklists and know this stuff to sort of know what they're looking for. That's why I really want to make this newsletter, is I think that, you know, there's so many things to think about and so many things to consider, and you and I both know this because we've been doing this gig for, you know, 16, 17 years. But I don't know how anyone who's just starting off on a move is meant to know all this stuff.
And I totally agree. And we have been working very hard on the Fat Expats newsletter, and it's coming soon to the internet near you.
Okay, so let's move on from homeschooling and talk about feedback from this
week.
Our lovely, lovely listeners. Now, can I do this first one because I know this lovely, lovely listener. This is Emma Morell, and I know that Emma's been listening because I met Emma during the week. So Emma said, I love all the topics, always so pertinent and seems to be just what I've been talking about with friends in any given week. I love having these ladies on in the background as I potter around the house with a cup of tea or drive around Doha, and it's like they're right there in the room with me. So thank you, Emma, but I'll segue into my segues are terrible today because I can't tell you how I know Emma until a little bit later.
All right, so that's Emma. So here's Freddie's mum, and I don't know Freddie's mum, but I think she's fantastic.
Do you think
she
that's
says she's a long time? No, it's a real name, but she's Freddie's mom. Come on. And she said she's a long-time listener. I've been listening to this podcast since the very first episode, and I am so sorry this is the first time I am reviewing it. That's okay. I have been hooked from day one. As someone who has lived an expat life and has had to reluctantly return to the real world, I've found this podcast to be somewhere I can feel at home and amongst my own people. There are so many challenges with being an expat, regardless of whether you're in Asia, Africa, or America, and you have always managed to find the parallels for a community that is literally spread worldwide. Keep going with what you do. You are awesome.
Oh, you're awesome, Kirsty. Thanks. And we had, and this definitely isn't her real name, DRSHK.
I thought it was like Doctors Hong Kong. That's how I read that.
Oh, that's very clever. You read it as Doctors Hong Kong, and I read it as Drushk from UK. thanks for the awesome ideas and great interviews and lovely ideas of things to watch and listen to. Keep them coming. We will. That's exactly what we are just about to do. Nikki, podcasts. What have you been listening to?
Podcasts. So this week I have been listening to the Richard Simmons podcast, Kirsty, that you spoke about last week.
What did you think?
And I really enjoyed it. It's the kind of podcast I enjoy. And like from content to production and all that kind of stuff, I thought it was great. I also went to some of the reviews to have a look because of what we talked about last week about how do we feel about this kind of podcast.
Yes.
And one of the reviews said, what are you talking about? Richard Simmons updates his Facebook page constantly. So I went to Richard Simmons' Facebook page, which is a public page.
Yeah.
And it's true. He does update it all the time. But it's not, it's more inspo. So it's not like a personal message like today I had a cup of tea and looked out the window and saw this. It's right. Like, you know, it's Monday, have your best Monday. So it's not necessarily that it's Richard Simmons. Do you know what I mean? So it is an official Facebook page and it does have the tick and all that, but you don't know that it's actually Richard Simmons doing it. But,
wow.
But it, so, yeah, I'm so conflicted and torn by it all. But I'm going to keep listening, which is the idea.
Yeah, do you wonder whether Richard Simmons paid someone to do his Facebook page and he's just, you know, they're just still doing it?
It could be.
Look, I really struggle with this one because I do think, and someone else sent me a note during the week, the lovely Rachel Award, who is a listener and a friend who's recently moved to Egypt, and she said she's listening to it. And I said, it is a bit sleazy. Do you feel a bit sleazy listening to a guy who's making money out of, you know, I think you can obviously see that Richard Simmons is in a lot of pain and that, you know, he's having a major breakdown in his life and has decided to just get away from everyone. And this guy saying he cares about him and so he's chasing him. And it's like, do you know, he has people living in his house. But it is fascinating. Did you listen to the second week?
I did listen to the second week.
Yeah.
I listened to it all.
Yeah.
So I'm going to keep listening to it.
Yeah.
And the other podcast that I really love this week was a podcast from the New York Times, the Daily podcast, and it was a bit political. So it was about the new immigration policy in the US, and they went to a town in southern Illinois that had voted overwhelmingly for Donald Trump, and ICE had come, the immigration people had come through the town, and they'd asked one of the pillars of the community who raises money for schools, would do anything for anyone, helps everyone, is a restaurant manager in town, They'd asked him for ID and he didn't have any. So he was arrested and is now in a detention center. And he turns out that he is an illegal immigrant. And all these people that voted for Donald Trump are vouching 100% for this guy, saying, you know, he gives back so much to the community. Some of them even knew he was illegal, but, you know, had never thought anything of it, just thought he was contributing and all that kind of stuff. So it's just so interesting to hear these people who are very conservative and very committed to their new president really question the immigration policy and say, you know, and one of the guys said, you know, I support Donald Trump, but I no longer support his immigration policy. So I just thought it was fascinating because it's one of these looks of these towns. And, you know, people talk about the coasts and how they've got one view and then the rest of America's got another view. So I just thought it was really, really interesting. And I really enjoyed that one this week.
So what was the name of that episode?
So the episode was on the 27th of February. And it's what happened when immigration and customs enforcement agents showed up in a small town that voted overwhelmingly for President Trump. So that was the subtitle of the episode. I really loved it.
Fantastic. That sounds really, really good. I'm going to go and listen to that. Okay. So
what about you?
For me, so this week, and I know this is about podcasts, but trust me, I'll get there in just a second. And the whole thing about Emma will make more sense. So I spoke this week at a women's networking meeting. It was the Qatar Professional Women's Association. I was asked to speak about reinventing your career, which I did. And I did a quick blog about it that you'll see on the Four Kids 20 Suitcases blog, which is kirstyriceonline.com. And I want to say a big shout out to the lovely Emma, who also left all the reviews on the podcast. And that's why, because when she sent me a note and asked me to speak, she said, oh, someone had told me that you had already covered this in your podcast when we'd done... What did we call it, Nikki? It was called
New Country, New Career.
That's right. Anyway, that's what sent Emma off on her Two Fat Expats podcast listening. Because when I got to the event, she took one look at me and said, oh, my gosh, I've just listened to you over and over and over and over again, and now you're here. So it was quite funny. We had a bit of a giggle. But there were some other women speaking at that event. And they were talking about taking your business online, which got me thinking about Pat Flynn. And for those who don't know who he is, he has a podcast called Smart Passive Income, or SPI. And he is the guru on all things social media and social media marketing wise. I would highly recommend tuning in if you're thinking of starting an online business. It's just a good podcast, I think, that takes you around, you know, if you're going to set up an email list and how you set up that list and what you're doing for content and what you're doing with your business online. There's lots and lots of tips, and he shares everything. Like, there's no secrets. He tells you exactly what he does and how he does it, and he's incredibly successful. So I think that'd be a good one to listen to.
Excellent. What about TV?
Okay. Have you talked about This Is Us? I couldn't remember if you already had.
I do watch it. I can't remember if I talked about it, but it's worth talking about again.
Yes.
If I have.
So the other night, because, you know, it's that whole thing of finding something all the kids can watch, and it's probably not appropriate for little people, but it's fine if your kids are just a little bit bigger. But This Is Us, my kids are now completely into it and desperate for the next episode to come out, and we all enjoy watching it together. So the premise of This Is Us is that you're constantly kind of following two different timelines. So in the first episode, you don't actually realise that's what you're doing.
You don't know, yes.
And you don't, yeah. So in the first episode, and I'm not going to give anything away, but the first episode is a couple who are pregnant with triplets, and that's one storyline. And then the second storyline is twins who are sharing their 36th birthday drama and how that day is unfolding. And then there's another guy in it that looks like he's got a completely different story. But there's a hook at the end where it's one of those things where all the stories tie in together. And it is one of those moments where you go, Oh, I work it all out. But my guys love it. And what I really love is watching them think that they're complete geniuses for working it out and tying it all together. But there's always seems to be a little hook at the end of each one where you go, oh, and, you know, can't wait to sort of see the next one to see what happened in the story. Are you enjoying it?
I love it. Love it, love it, love it.
Yeah, it's
good. And I really, it's really, everybody I know loves it.
Yeah.
Everybody.
So
I don't know anyone who's going, oh, pish posh, don't like that.
Yeah. So it's called This Is Us, and you can get it on iTunes and get it up to date as each episode comes out. The other one I wanted to make a comment on, because I know we have lots of people that can't get access to any cable TV, who are really, really isolated, and they're solely surviving on the internet. For those people, just a reminder that YouTube is really upping their service, and they're about to make some massive changes for how they're going to deliver television, and that's only just come out in the last couple of days. But one of the things you can also do is don't forget to search on YouTube, because there's so many people that share things that they probably shouldn't. But if you're a Graham Norton tragic like I am, you can follow a YouTube channel called Shadow Heart. So I'm not sure if everybody does this, but I have different channels that I follow for different things, different people that share football stuff or different opinion.
Is this an opportunity to mention Port Adelaide?
Yes, well, I do actually happen to follow the Port Adelaide Football Club now that you mention it. Thank you, Nikki.
There you go.
I tried so hard not to mention the Port Adelaide Football Club this week, and I'm really glad it was you that brought it up.
You said football, like, I'm just going to throw it out there and see if anybody picks it.
So, yes, there's a YouTube channel called Shadow Heart, and I don't know who is behind Shadow Heart, but he puts out every episode of Graham Norton right up to date, and full episodes, full performances. And last week he had the one with Hugh Jackman, Patrick Stewart and Ian McKellen, and it's fantastic. And James Blunt's on there as well.
It's a great episode. Now, the other thing you might not know about YouTube, and I don't know if you know this, but I watch Scandal on YouTube. You can buy a season like you can on Apple TV or something.
Yes. And they're about to get even bigger with that now, Nikki. They've just announced that they're basically going to be competing with cable from now on.
Yeah, so there's already YouTube Red, which my son is desperate to belong to because he wants to watch all his favourite YouTubers who have all this video footage that only goes onto Red. So, they also have TV shows. So, yes, it's YouTube is fantastic.
What are you
now,
watching?
Now, I've been watching.
What are you watching on TV?
Big Little Lies. Have you seen
it? How are you watching it? What's it on? What format?
It's an HBO show, and if you have access to HBO Go, which you can buy access to individually, you can watch it that way, which is what we're doing.
And so this is Big Little Lies. So this is Leanne Moriarty's book.
Yes, and they've changed the location from Sydney to California, and it's got Reese Witherspoon, Nicole Kidman and Shailene Woodley and some other people you recognise in there, and I really enjoyed the first two episodes. So I'm looking forward to that, to keep watching that.
Okay.
And I'm also watching a show that I just stumbled across called Divorce.
I am desperate to watch that. I keep putting it on my must-watches and not watching it.
So, yes. It's an uncomfortable little show, but it's really good. I've only seen three episodes, but I am quite enjoying it.
So
it's got Sarah Jessica Parker and Thomas Hayden Church, who Ned and Stacey was kind of my reference for him, but he's kind of been in a lot of things.
Yeah. Very, very good. Okay, social media for me this week is I have gone back to the hashtag my reality. So anyone who's been around on the 4Kids, 20 Suitcases and a Beagle page for a long time would remember I used to do this hashtag my reality where we'd have a different theme every day and everyone would take a photo of that theme from all around the world, and we made some fantastic collages and things of what everyone was up to. But I think I got very, very lazy and very, very slack, and It's too much to do one a day. But Nikki, you were saying the other day, you know, maybe we just do one a week, which we've done this week, and we did it with two fat expats as well. So it's a two yes. fat expats, four kids, 20 suitcases thing. And so this week it's been my backyard, and you took a photo of your backyard and I took a photo of my backyard. And I think last time I checked, about 60 people today have also put photos of their backyards from all over the world.
Yes.
Like, it's amazing. And now
there's, yeah, so there's some of those photos on Instagram and with those hashtags, hashtag two fat expats, hashtag 4K 20 suitcases, and hashtag my reality, or it's hashtag my backyard. Can't remember. And then some of them are on the Facebook pages as well. So, but will we do another collage to put on the blog, or?
Yeah, definitely. I'll put another one of those together once, sort of maybe in a couple of days, give people time to put their backyards yeah. up. But yes, there's a lot of hashtags there. Feel free to grab any of them.
So that's right. And I'm just constantly scrolling through hashtags. I'm just a hashtag search fiend on Instagram. So I'm looking for them. And so this week it's my backyard, and next week it's what? What is it next week, Kirsty?
Next week it's makes me think of you.
Okay. So people can start planning if they've already done my backyard. Now, Kirsty, I just want to touch on something. How are you going with your, today's the first day of Lent.
Yes.
And it's the 1st of March. So how are you going with your item removal for Lent?
I removed about 5 pieces of clothing this morning. They're gone. Yes, so going well. So I've got rid of a whole heap of clothes, and I've cleaned out one child's locker. I've got 3 more to go. But yes, day one, March 1st, doing well. So we're kicking along. Okay, Nikki, I think that should be us for this week, shouldn't it? Because we have talked for a long, long, long time.
We are out of time, so we're going to quickly rush and say we'll see you all next week. But we just want to say to keep an eye out for the information about our big fat expat meetups, Dubai and Shanghai.
Yes, so Dubai in April and Shanghai in May. And don't forget, please, please, thank you for leaving the reviews and the ratings on iTunes. You are helping us out greatly by doing that. And come and say hello so we can say hello to you online. And we'll see you next week.
Okay, see you next week. Bye.